Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe, where the real magic is the magic you make yourself. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Once more from Edinburgh, the arts capital of the world, through myself, Ewan Spence, and to your ears, it's a little flavour of the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Let's just pull our music down there because we are in the third week of the Fringe, but it is only Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, six nights of Fringe. If this festival was only 6 days long, you'd still think it was the greatest thing in the world. In fact, it's nearly 26 days. So many shows, so many little moments and stories. One of those we're going to capture just now. In a few moments, I'll be speaking to Mario, the maker magician. But first, the big shortlist. The shortlist that non-fringe people pay attention to outside of the industry. They were once known as the Perriers, and then they were the Iffies, and then there were other sponsors. Nendor wasn't a sponsor for some years, and they just kept the money themselves to make sure that the name still stayed in the game. The Edinburgh Comedy Awards announced their shortlists today, and those acts are going to get a nice ticket sale boost. They're going to have a line for every single poster and press release forevermore, and a chance to be in the same winner's trophy as Los Trios Ring Barkus. Yes, fame, fortune, and glory await. Immortality for the winners. And on that shortlist, let's just run through the names. So again, you might get a bit of name recognition when you're looking through. Up for Best Show, we have Ahir Shah, Ania Magliano, Emmanuel Sonubi, Ian Smith, Janine Haruni, Julia Masley, Kieran Hodgson, and Phil Ellis. And I love the fact that it's Phil Ellis with his excellent comedy show. So that's a good way of naming yourself, just to make sure everything gets in. Whether that's going to help the judges remains to be seen. Best Newcomer Award: Bill O'Neill, Dan Tiernan, Lindsay Santoro, Louise Young, Martin Urbano, Paddy Young, and Uruk Ashfaj, all up for that award as well. They are going to be announced on Saturday. So if we do a podcast on Monday to recap stuff, I'll be able to tell you then. If not, you might have to wait until next actually, maybe not next August. We might carry on doing the archive stuff in the off-season. We'll see what happens. But anyway, Edinburgh Comedy Awards shortlist going up there. But now, Mario the Maker Magician. He is what happens when you decide to make your own magic. From whatever he found around himself, he created this wonderful mix of robotics and magic and sleight of hand and slapstick, and it all comes from having an old tomato soup can as your next robot assistant. It's a family show packed with slapstick humour, the handmade robots mentioned, and a lot of skill. Even though, as with all the good comedy performers, that skill isn't always readily apparent. There's a mix of science in here with creativity and showmanship, and that's incredibly hard to balance all of that and still find the laughter. Mario makes it look easy. Plays the underbelly George Square, 10:55 in the morning, every day through to the end of the Fringe. This is myself speaking to Mario. So much can be packed into a single hour at the Fringe, but so much can be packed into four words that will tell you what the hour will be. Mario the Maker Magician. Which word shall we address first?
Maybe we'll go in order. We'll start with Maker. Or Mario, right? So, right, okay, now, you do realise that in the last week, Nintendo's original voice of Mario has retired.
No way.
We're not getting the original voice anywhere in Mario Wonder.
There's no more It's-a-me?
There's no more Mario. So, yes, let's start with Maker.
Yeah, that's right. I love it. Well, let's rewind. We'll start with Mario. My name is Mario Marchese, and I'm first-generation American. My parents came from Italy to New York, and we're New York-based. And we do magic shows.
How important is it being first generation American?
It's very important because not only am I the first generation American, but I'm also the firstborn in my family. So I watched my father come from Italy as a stonemason, going to a new country, learning a new language, watching him climb a mountain while I was going through my teenage years. So it really kind of shaped who I was as an adult, you know, and in a good way. Taught me to be a hard worker.
Has he seen this show?
Is my father? You know, it's funny, as serious as that was, my dad is probably all the comedy that you see in the show derives from all the amazing holiday nights of my father just living it up and being crazy and fun and funny. And I think there's a beautiful mix, you know, between my mom and dad in my show. You know, I think there's a little bit of like the passion and the joys of life from my mother and the ridiculous slapstick stupidity from my father.
We're going to take these words in different order because I think it's probably best if we go with magician next.
Magician. Magic. We bill it as a magic show. It's very interesting because that always pains me with words like to be categorized into something, you know? Because when you arrive at the theater, you'll notice these giant inflatables in my show, and I handmade them, you know? And it's a symbol throughout the show. Like, everything in my show is homemade. I'm obsessed with making robotics and utilizing accessibility, like utilizing things that are accessible, like cardboard and tape and programming and sensors and it's all just kind of hodgepodged into this, like, I don't know, I think it's like a second grade science project, but like on an insane scale.
And that bit, everybody else listening, is where the Maker comes in. Let's just illustrate this for a minute on the radio, because, you know, that's what we do here. Let's paint a picture. Everybody probably knows the classic effect of there's a little red spongy thing and it goes under a cup and then it's not there and it's there and it's not there, it's not there. How do you put a twist on that to make it not a magician's trick, but a Maker magician's trick?
Oh, actually, you picked a great question. We call that the cups and balls in magic. That is a classic of magic. I mean, that goes back hundreds of years to street performing. In my show, I have a little robot lamp, and I like to think of like a Pixar lamp, you know, and the shell of the lamp, the is a tomato can, you know, and it kind of just bops around and what happens is I take the classic of magic of a cup and ball trick, but the lampshade is the cup, and then I use a sponge ball, and you'll see in my show as the ball disappears from my hand will reappear underneath this lampshade, you know, and so we take classic principles of magic and we utilize 3D printing and programming and sensors to show kids that robots can be funny, you know? Sometimes we get in the education system, we just like, you know, we make these robots do this one phase thing, like it'll draw a line and it'll follow it and that's it, you know? But what about like making the lamp, you know, making a robot fall apart on purpose, you know? Like it all of a sudden can spark a new excitement for kids because it sparks it in me, you know? And I've watched over the years how the more I use robotics in that angle, the more joy it brings, you know, to everybody, you know?
Now, I saw this at the preview shows, and my first thought was, that's a really good puppeteer. And it's like, I don't think that's a puppeteer. I think that's silicon.
Yeah, sometimes people think, like, some of the robotics, or, like, there's someone backstage that uses a remote control or something, you know. But it's all programmed with live sensors based on the audience reaction and sneaky stuff. So there'll be loops of code that I will allow to play. And if the audience doesn't react properly or if there's lack of reaction, I can press a secret button or something and change the loop. And that's all come from doing many shows and just, you know, I always say the audience creates the performer, you know? And what happens is if we listen to our audience, we can change our performance. And what's cool about coding, I can go home, plug in the USB stick to the computer and change that delay from 15 seconds to 12 and then get the laugh. You know,
but is there any there's no difference in that from like a stand-up listening to the audience or from someone on the theater stage realizing the reaction to a soliloquy needs more time or less time. this is the same discipline as all of that. It's just done in a slightly different way.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm literally like, on a daily basis, changing the delay in my code, you know, like the wait time in my code, to see when I can get the best reaction and the best laugh, you know? And it's amazing to me, like if a cardboard sign falls off my suitcase and then another one does, maybe it's 3.5 seconds, but sometimes I had it 5 seconds first and it was a better reaction, you know? And then I go back to 3.5 and it's not as strong, and I'll analyze that information based, you know, on my shows, and then you'll find that sweet spot. It's like 4.2 seconds and then all of a sudden you get this big laugh. So it is, it's just like you said, like the comedian takes his notes to get that timing right, and it's the same with the programming.
It's that sweet spot, the same at the fringe as say it is in the Bronx.
It's a whole other podcast. I mean, for me being the first time in this country and doing my show here, it's been so beautiful understanding the rhythm of comedy for children and adults, and understanding the subtleties. There'll be subtleties that will just, I'll get an instant reaction in New York, but here I had to tweak it just a little bit to get that instant reaction. But isn't that the beauty of life? It's like, you know, every culture is just a little bit different, and that's been part of the fun.
Talk about the maker culture. It's something that I know from my day job, but it's probably a phrase that a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Yeah, so the maker community is, you know, I would say it started back to get redefined in the early 2000s with Make Magazine. I think they started this culture, this explosion called Maker Faire, you know, where everyone just brought something they made. It was like a big show and tell. It was insane. And what happens is it gave people purpose, you know, like we all strive for community, you know, and we realized like there's all these people that like we're like nerds, like we love specific kinds of making, and we bring it to the Maker Faire, and all of a sudden you get valued for what you do. Like you get honored, you know, you win awards, a ribbon, you know, for making a crazy pointless machine that like turns itself off, you know, or like, you know, like stuff like that. So what happened was, what was so beautiful is like Make Magazine and Dale Doherty and that wonderful team, you know, really helped my family over the years to give my show a chance to breathe and create a show out of all these cardboard props and robotics. And that's what the maker community has done. There's people that make a living performing just at maker fairs, you know, where they've created comedy and science and magic for the sake of inspiring kids to make.
What about coming out of this show? Do you get feedback from the parents of, you'll never guess what they did when they get home? Does the loop that you have with the audience continue after, well, it's an hour here at the Fringe, does it continue after the hour?
Yeah, one of my favorite compliments is a couple weeks ago we got a compliment from a mom that said, you know what my son did? We got home, he opens the recycling bin, dumps everything out, and we're like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm making a magic show like Mario, you know? And it was the best compliment I ever got, because he understood that just because the stage is elevated and the audience sits below, but he's at the same level as me. There's no hurdles when he looks at the visual objects on stage. There's no hurdles in the presentation, that the accessibility is there, that he can make it himself. That's my purpose, is to eliminate as many hurdles as possible, to say, hey, I'm one with you just because I'm on stage, you know? And so that really impacted me, because the things that excite me, I want to make the audience get excited with me, you know?
And what about the Fringe? I'm a long timer at the Fringe, and we always talk about accessibility and openness and anybody able to rock up and do a show. It's been a bit tricky over the last couple of years given extenuating geopolitical circumstances. But this is your first time at the Fringe. What's it feel like to you then?
You want me to be honest? I mean, I'll be honest. Like, you know, at first, when we first got here, it was very overwhelming. I felt like I was in Times Square, New York City. There's just cards getting passed everywhere. And it's like, oh my goodness, like, which shows do we see? It could be overwhelming, you know? But as I've been here and I'm sitting here and I have 5 shows left, what I've realized, why I've fallen in love with Edinburgh during this time, is that it's a city of dreams right now. Like, every single card is someone's dream, you know? And like, even the stage managers here, like, listening to them talk on the off time, like, about, like, their dream was to be in theater. And they didn't care what position in the theater world they ended up in. They just wanted to be part of theater, you know? And to hear stuff like that, there's a reason why it's beautiful, you know? And what my favorite part about The Fringe, no lie, is I love the way we value performance, and how we can go out in the street and see so many performers, and we it's not like we're, you know, not saying New York is different, but I'm just saying there is something special buzzing. It's electric during this month, you know?
Is it everything you thought it would be?
Is it everything I thought it would be? I mean, we don't have New York pizza, you know, but seriously, it's been surprising. Let's just keep it like that. I didn't know what to expect. There's a lot of beautiful surprises. You don't realize the caliber of shows that are here. Like, you just get lost, but there's people that are like the top of their field, just play with spoons, you know, and like create this huge show that you never thought you would fall in love with and cry at a show like this, you know, like that's why I got into magic to begin with. I mean, it is the idea of taking like a normal everyday object that we utilize and then, you know, being able to do something that wows an audience, you know, like for me, I'll give you an example, is Charlie Fry. He's like one of my heroes in magic. I watched a video of him taking a spoon from a dinner table, planting it on his nose, and balancing it on his nose, and then flicking his head, and the spoon just lands perfectly behind his ear. And it just blew my mind, because I've been playing with a spoon my whole life, and I never even knew that was possible. I think there's a spirit of that at the Fringe, you know, you get inspired.
So what do you take away from this adventure?
What do I take away?
Apart from crippling debt.
Yeah, it's definitely a stretch, you know, because I'm here with both my kids. I'm here with my wife. We're a family business. We do this full time. I don't know. Only time will tell. I don't know. My daughter is 11. My son is 8. I'm just curious to see how this affects their lives. Last night, we were sitting at a stoop. And my friend Maximilian, he's an amazing ventriloquist I saw at a magic convention a couple months ago. And he talked to me how he's been coming to the Fringe since he was 7 years old. And he was sitting outside on the Royal Mile watching street performers and paying attention that these people are doing something and then they're getting big reactions and they're bringing something of value. And then he's saying, as a kid, watching the hat getting filled with money and understanding that there's something here that's important that the world needs, you know? And it's just so cool to hear that perspective, me being 43 coming here for the first time and him growing up here. And that's how he became, and now he's like a master at what he does. He's freaking genius ventriloquist, you know? We watched him be a host. And come on, Edinburgh, you got to be proud, man, that you birth these kind of things, you know?
So you're one little piece of this massive jigsaw puzzle we love every year. As you say, as we record, there's 5 shows left. Where can people find it?
You can find me at the Giant Purple Cow at George Square. When you walk in, you'll see this enormous upside-down purple cow. It's a beautiful theater. It's at George Square. We are probably one of the first shows in the morning. We're at 10:55 a.m. We have 5 shows left. Come out. Every kid, every single person leaves with something at the end of the show. I'm not going to tell you what it is. We have
magic. They leave with crippling debt as well. I am going to throw in a spoiler.
Yes. Who knows when we'll come back? Come out. We got 5 shows left, and come out. It's a blast. You'll love it. It's for every age. Even if you don't have kids, come out and just sit and come enjoy.
Mario, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me being part of this.
Mario the Maker Magician there, Underbelly George Square, 10:55 a.m. every day. Link, like, love, share, subscribe. That's the magic you can give this pot. Oh, how cheesy was that? Anyway, you know the usual stuff that you can do with social sharing. You can leave star reviews, you can put posters up, you can make mention of us in whatever thing Twitter is being called itself nowadays. I remember when it was called Odeo. That's such a deep cup. Anyway, I'm getting close to the end of the Fringe. It is manic. There are many shows to see. There are many shows that I'm going to miss out of the 3,500. Some of them are here. Some of them are on my radar. Some of them I'll see over the weekend. All of them are worthwhile. Every single one of them is doing the best show they possibly can. And they can find an audience at the Edinburgh Fringe. For now, back into the capital city I go. Back you go to whatever you're doing, or to the next podcast if you're listening to this in November. We'll catch you in the next podcast, wherever, whenever you are. Ta-ra for now. You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence. Produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.